Welcome to the Happy Homeschooler Podcast, a digital support group for everyone interested in a learning lifestyle. I'm your host, Jennifer.
I'm your co-host, Holly.
And I'm your co-host, Melody.
Today, we'll be discussing project-based homeschooling. But before we get to that, how's everybody been since last time? It's really nice to have the whole gang back together again. How are you, Holly?
Well, I'm doing just fine. And I am glad we're all back together again. We missed you. I don't think you know, but I'm going to France at the end of this month.
Ooh, I didn't know. That's exciting.
Oh my gosh. I'm so excited. Wow. Lifelong dream for me.
That's amazing.
So yeah, my sister is going to be in France for about 2.5 months and she's rented an apartment. So I don't have to pay anything to be there. I just have to get there. And of course, pay for my expenses while I'm there, treat my sister some meals and things like that. So we've already gotten tickets to go to the Louvre. I didn't realize when I booked my travel that I'm going to be in France on Easter. And I'm a religious person, so it's real important for me to go to church on Easter. And I found that there's an American cathedral, basically an Anglican church, which is similar to me. I'm Episcopalian. There's an American cathedral in the 8th arrondissement, and we're going to be staying in the 6th. So they're not far apart by taking the metro.
That's great.
So, yeah. So I'm going to go to church on Easter in France.
Wow.
Oh, I'm wildly excited.
You're going to be speaking so much French. This is so exciting.
I'm just overwhelmed by the whole thought. And I've been working really hard on my French lessons in Duolingo. So, yeah, I'm going to be in France. So, yeah. Melody, what have you been up to?
What have I been up to? I guess navigating the medical system, because my husband had a doctor and then things changed. And so he's no longer in their service area. So now we have to find him a new primary care physician. And I didn't know that was going to be such a process and take a couple of months. I just thought you called up the next guy. But no, you have to apply and what are your medications and what are all your health issues and la, la, la. And so anyway, we did finally find someone. They didn't have any openings until May. And so it's like, okay, well, what do we do? And fee runs out of anything. Anyway, it's just a whole process. And, I knew it would be, but I didn't know it was going to be. It's never taken this long before to find a doctor for him. So it kind of left me with a bad taste in my mouth.
I feel for you because I went through that with my husband.
Yeah. And it does seem like wait times are getting longer to see specialists and even to get the primary care doctors. My son had surgery and we were supposed to have him get physical therapy. He's after surgery. And the therapy office was like, well, we can see you in 3 months. Like, well, they said he has to be seen this week.
Oh, my gosh.
That's when you're like, tell me what to do. We'll just do it ourselves. You know?
Yep.
But yeah. That's what we're doing. And how are you, Jennifer? I know you have super exciting news.
Yes, we have a new grandbaby. Olivia June. She was born February 27th, and I got to be there, and it was so exciting. Aww. Everything went great. They're doing wonderful. And her baby big sister, she's 18 months old, is absolutely in love with her. And you know, you never know at that age how it's going to go. So we didn't know what she would do, but she keeps saying my baby, and just wants to hug her, and she's not having any kind of like jealousy problems or anything like that. So it's just been so sweet. It's just wonderful.
Super special time. This was my experience with the 18, my kids who were 18 months apart. It was the older kids, the 2-year-old and the 2.5-year-olds, they were not happy. They were like, I know, I didn't ask for this.
That was kind of mine too, but a couple of my kids were more like, at that age, just not interested, just like, okay, whatever, and didn't pay any attention to the baby. So I didn't know if she would go that way, you know, because she's busy doing her thing all the time. Very interested, so it's nice.
We're all doing great.
And they live with us right now, so we get to just get
extra grandma time.
See them all the time. I love it.
Are you allowed to kiss her?
No.
What's the magic number? 6 months? I can't remember.
I think 6 months. Yeah. I don't know. I'll have to check in and find out. Not now, though.
Yeah. I remembered that from your older granddaughter.
Yeah. It's okay. Yeah. It's hard not to when you're looking at them. They're just so sweet.
They are so sweet. And they're pretty sturdy.
But they're even, sturdy. You know, teaching the big sister not to do that too. And she's been very good with it. She gives her sweet little kisses on her feet. And it's just.
Oh, that's good.
Cute. Good. Yeah.
Mostly but, it was people outside of our home, like perfect strangers.
Yeah, I think
please do not slobber on my baby.
Right. And I think it's just in our house. There's so many people. Everybody works at
Your house is a hub.
Yeah. There's a lot of exposure to all kinds
of things. Well, you can still sniff her, though, can't you?
I definitely do that.
Smell her little head.
Yeah. Today, we're talking about project-based homeschooling, and I'm excited to talk about this because it's been a very big part of how we did our unschooling with all of my kids since they were little. So have you guys heard of, well, instead of project-based homeschooling, have you heard of project-based learning before?
I mean, yes, to a point. I guess we could say that my son's fascination with YouTubers has been some kind of a project-based learning. I don't really incorporate it as school per se, you know, because I'm like, eh. But I guess I could see how that is.
So it's project-based learning for the last for a while now has been a super popular way to teach in the school system as well. It's been kind of a trendy thing to do, and it's called PBL, and you'll hear about it a lot in the schools settings. In a school setting, it's basically the kids are learning through solving problems, basically. Like, you know, you give the group of kids, the class, a real world type problem to solve together. And then they take it and they run with it, you know, and they have come up with their ideas and make a plan and create a project to show how they're going to solve this problem and things like that.
Oh, you know what? I was in junior achievement in high school, and that's kind of, it was a business group. And we had to come up with a product, and we had to manufacture it and sell it. We made desk organizers out of plexiglass tubes and things.
Yeah, that's exactly the idea. And it's it's a really popular way of teaching in schools right now to get away from, you know, just the rote sitting at desks, listening, learning. It's a much more hands-on involved way. And it connects kids really well with the real world too. So it shows that what they're, you know, they're learning as they go and making connections that make it feel more valuable to the student as well.
That makes a lot of sense, because we've all had kids who say, why do I have to learn this? Am I ever going to use this?
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. So that idea, project-based homeschooling, is a whole other level of that, because we're homeschoolers and we like to take it to the next level.
It's kind of right. Anyway.
So with project-based homeschooling, it's a whole entire way of learning, right? It's a self-directed, student-directed, self-led, interest-led, all of those little keywords that we use for those kind of things.
Delight-directed, all of those.
Yeah, all of that stuff. And it's led by the student's interests. They are choosing what they're learning about and how they're learning about that. And they're managing all their projects themselves. And you, the teacher, the parent, is there as a mentor only. And a mentor plays a lot of roles, which we'll talk about later. So it differentiates from just unschooling, because you are a mentor. You're not just letting them, they're not just doing whatever they want all the time, like a pure unschooling type of thing. But your child has an interest. They decide what they want to do with that interest. And then you, as the mentor, give them the support they need to pursue that interest, basically. And these can be large projects, small projects. They can be something that lasts a day. It can be something that lasts weeks or months or a year. So it's pretty open-ended in that way. But it's also, it's based on the Reggio Emilia philosophy of education, which is a self-directed education model. And then it's just taken and fit into your home so that you can make it work for your family. When I started doing this, I read a book by a lady called Lori Pickert, and it's called Project-Based Homeschooling. And it's a great, great, great resource if you're interested in this. It's a quick read, but she does a really great job of laying out all the basics of what is project-based homeschooling and how can I do it with my home? How can I do it with different age groups? How can I do it with multiple kids and that kind of thing?
Well, I hadn't heard that there was a whole methodology about it. For us, it was real learning in the real world. We would do, my kids did that naturally. I think that's just part of the way. If you want to know about something, you just jump in there and do it. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it was a family project-based learning, mm-hmm. or sometimes it was, you know, my son wanted to build a go-kart, so off he went. Yes. I was the one that's like, yes, let's go pick up the parts you need.
So that's a great example, because that in project-based homeschooling, there is a methodology. I can't say that word now either.
Methodology
to it, in that you aren't saying, okay, let's go get the parts we need. Your child says, hey, I want to make a go-kart. And then you are saying, okay, why don't you plan that out? And then they do all the planning. And when they're ready to say, I need to go to the store and get this and this and this, then your job as the mentor is to take them, you know, and help provide them the money and the ride to the store, you know.
Although sometimes it can also be, how are you going to earn the money to pay for these parts?
Yes, absolutely. So it's like, but you are, you take a step back and let them figure those things out. So, for example, if they were like, okay, I need this and this and this from the store, that's when you would say, okay, how are you going to do that? And then they would need to figure out, how are they going to do that? And if that means they needed money, well, how they would do that.
Right. So you end up, and that's how it works.
Right. And I think our kids, most kids that are homeschooling, because they have a lot of free time, are doing these types of things on their own.
I was just going to say, you know, at the beginning of when we talked about project-based homeschooling, I thought, well, I didn't really do that. But all of my kids had projects that they, you know, one of my daughters, she was into baking and she wanted to learn to do cake decorating and things like that. So we helped her get supplies for it and she watched videos. But it wasn't, for us, it wasn't part of our homeschooling. It was more like their extracurricular activities.
Right.
So I didn't count that as, I didn't like look at my lesson plan and go, yep, learned how to decorate cakes, check. For us, it was an extracurricular that we supported them in those ventures. Right.
And it can be used that way, but it can also be your entire schooling. It can and somewhere in between, of course. But for example, instead of saying they learned to do a cake, it would be all the things involved in that project that they learned. Not that they learned the cake decorating, but that they learned how to buy the ingredients. They learned how to calculate the math that was needed for the recipe. They, you know, all the steps along the way from the beginning to the end of the project
would
be considered the schooling part of it, you know? Mm-hmm. Which we've talked about with unschooling before, that your kids are getting all kinds of school during their time when they're doing their own thing, as well as your directed learning time. And I think the difference to me with just letting your kids play or do their own thing between that and project-based learning is that there is some more structure to project-based learning. There's a kind of a formula for it. And we'll talk more in a little bit about like some steps to doing it. But there's more support than there would be for just, oh, my kid's off playing, doing their own project. You are more involved than that. And you're leading it a little bit as the mentor, but they're making all of the decisions along the way.
The benefit of the child having a mentor is, I say this all the time, you don't know what you don't know.
Yes.
So someone that can say, ask a leading question, do you think that blah, blah, blah? And then the kid goes, oh, I got to go figure that out. You know, whereas they might not know there's something else to figure out and put them on the trail.
And it gives more meaning to their, it's not just my child's interested in this, so they're, you know, checking out a book about something. It makes the interest more meaningful because you're pursuing it deeper than they would on their own, obviously, because you're giving them some direction.
So it sounds like there are a lot of benefits to project-based homeschooling. Have you run into, and you do it, I think, more than many people I know, but have you come upon any drawbacks to it?
I think that it takes a certain personality from the parent. Well, also the child, I'll talk about that. But I think, first of all, as their mentor, you have to be pretty laid back and patient and not as structured, I guess, because there's no time limit on a project. There's no predicting which way the project's going to head. how involved your child's going to get in it, what they're going to need each day. You can't even tell, you know, ahead of time exactly what will they need from you that day. So you have to be very flexible. So I think the drawback is if you're a person who likes to have a very organized, structured learning environment, that this is probably not going to be the thing for you. But as you said, like, it could be part of what you do, or it could be added in once in a while. And you can, for people who are more structured, you can put limitations on it. It could be like Monday morning is our project time, you know, so it can be worked out. But I think it is definitely a style that is more for people who are more laid back and easygoing on schedule and organization. My struggle was being patient with them. Like, I'm a very patient person. But when, you know, that whole thing we talk about with homeschoolers where let them get bored kind of thing, like they're doing nothing and eventually, you know, I fully believe in that. But that is hard sometimes. And when they're doing a project and you see things that they're stalled on or something that they could do differently to make it easier, or you want to interject, you know, that's hard for me sometimes. To just wait it out, you know?
Yeah, especially if while they're stalled, their stall is all over your living room or something.
Yes.
That would make me nuts. My son is into Lego. Mm-hmm. He has a lot of, this is his comment. I'm a little bit like, I don't know if that's actually true. He's like, I have all this project stuff and his whole bedroom floor is covered in Lego. And I'm like, I think there's a better way to organize your quote unquote projects. So I think some of his projects are, I don't want to pick up my Legos.
But it was a big struggle for me too. I have a lot of kids and they all had ongoing projects.
Yeah.
And we have limited space. So that is a problem also.
So I'm like, we got to figure out a way. I said, and he's like, but it's my room. I go, yes, except.
Yeah.
In your house,
I have to come in here or you might get up in the night and fall and get hurt. So there are issues. Let's figure out a way to organize your projects. You want trays? You can put the certain pieces. Like, we have to figure out something that works better because this isn't working.
So we also. Yeah,
I've definitely dealt with that.
You've got to trust the learning process. And there's not a rigid timeline.
It's not a linear thing, right?
Right. That's kind of a personality thing. And for the students as well, I was going to get to that. Like, some kids don't like learning that way. Some kids would like you to give them a schedule and a structure and a worksheet. And, if you have a child who likes that, then this may not work for them.
They might be good with a mini project, right?
Yes.
Like, here's a small. So I personally love to play games. But open-ended games, I can't deal. Like, I can't deal with it. So, you know, that might be a kid who needs something that's a project, but it has a start and a finish.
Yeah.
There's like, hey, the project is to do this thing. And maybe over time, they might gain more skills where they can take on a different kind of a project that's not as delineated.
Yeah. In that kind of thing, you can start off really small, like if whatever your child's interested in, like, well, my boys were so into dinosaurs, you know, so a small start would be, hey, would you like to go get some dinosaur books? You know, and that's it. Like, that's it. And that's the open-ended invitation to let's start looking at some of your interests. And then, you know, maybe they'll draw a dinosaur picture. Maybe they'll make one out of Legos. You know, it's just a step into letting them express their interest and then supporting them.
I like that.
Which I think most parents do naturally.
Well, yeah. And I would say the drawbacks are manageable.
Yes. Yes, so, because I think you can fit this into whichever style of homeschooling you already do. It doesn't have to be the whole thing. It can fit into any type of homeschooling. If you do traditional academics, you know, studies at home, you can still do those and also do project-based homeschooling. And you can do it on a schedule if you want to. Yeah, so I think there's some flexibility in that too.
The Happy Homeschooler podcast is sponsored by TranscriptMaker.
TranscriptMaker is an online service that allows you to create professional high school transcripts from the comfort of your own home.
Save the worry. Never fear losing your transcript. TranscriptMaker keeps it saved in the cloud so you can access it anywhere, anytime.
Save your time. High school transcripts are made in a breeze with Transcript Maker. You just plug in your courses and grades, and the GPA appears on the transcript like magic.
Save your money. Transcript Maker offers a 14-day free trial, so you can give it a test drive and see how you like it. And when you decide to subscribe, you can save 20% off the cost of your subscription by using our exclusive coupon code HAPPY. That's H-A-P-P-Y in all caps.
Head to www.transcriptmaker.com and save today.
Transcript Maker.
Simply better transcripts.
So let's talk a little bit about what the steps are if you are doing a project-based homeschooling. So the first thing, obviously, is to figure out what your kids are interested in, which it sounds so easy, but can be really tricky. So what have you guys done to figure out what your kids are interested in when it's not real obvious?
I think all my kids were pretty much in my face about.
Yeah, pretty obvious. Yeah.
My youngest daughter, from a very early age, enjoyed drawing and writing, and she made her own little book. So I was like, okay, well, here's paper. Her computer, if you want to use it. She would constantly take all my encyclopedias into her room. I'd be like, where are my encyclopedias? She'd be doing research. She kind of, you know, I was like, okay, this is what this kid's into. My middle daughter, this is super funny. She and I have been talking about the Iditarod this week because as a little kid, she was really into dogs. And as an adult woman, she's really into dogs. And she's got three types of sled dogs, a husky, a malamute, a wolf hybrid. And she's training the two younger dogs to pull a sled. We couldn't give her the number of dogs she wanted. We did get a dog. But she ended up doing a lot of things with dogs. And she's interested in horses. So she would, you know, take care of people's dogs when they went out of town. When she was in 4-H, she did a whole thing about training dogs and brought her dog in and demonstrated. And she was into horses. And she went to horse camp. And she learned about horses. And so we just supported her as much as we could. You know, she wanted to do dog sitting. We were like, okay, we can make that work for you. You know, where do you have to be and how long is it going to take? And we get it on the schedule. But yeah, she's going to end up having like a whole bunch of dogs.
That's so
funny. I'm sure she'll be mushing in the Iditarod someday. I see that happening, you know. So I think most homeschool kids are pretty in your face about what their interests are.
I think for the most part they are. And what you just said is the best way to figure out your kids' interests is just to observe them and watch them and see what they gravitate towards. Mm-hmm. And again, most of us as parents naturally do that. Listening is a good point because you do have to, you know, you need to have conversations with them that aren't, you know, specific conversations. They need to be open-ended conversations and so that you can listen to what they really are interested in. One of the things that I do is have teacher meetings with my kids. And like quarterly or yearly, or, you know, I meet with them and we talk about their interests because you're right. My kids also had interests that lasted like over time through different ages, but at different ages, they also had new interests, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes I wasn't sure what those were. Those were, you know, kind of side interests and things. And when I would have meetings with them, that was my biggest goal at meetings is what are you interested in right now? What do you want to do? What do you enjoy doing right now? And really asking them the question and then taking the answers even when I found them to be ridiculous.
Or maybe they're not age appropriate. You know, like my son, he wants so badly to be a YouTuber and stream. And I'm like, dude, you're 11.
Uh-huh.
It's not happening. Well, you could get me an email account. No, there's reasons why you're not on social media at your age. But you can hone your skills in other ways.
But I love that you were able to find the germ of the idea and the interest and you'll figure out other ways to make it happen on a on a safe timeline for him. But like he can practice in other ways. But
and you can challenge him to come up with other ways to use that idea in ways that you're okay with right now. So after you kind of have an idea of what your kids are interested in, that's when you start asking them more specific questions about their interests. Like what would you like to do with this interest? Is there anything you'd like to do with this interest? And when they have some ideas, then you get started. And the things that you need to do as a mentor are to support them is to give them some things you need. One of the things I always did, and most people who do this recommend you do this, is I always gave my kids a project notebook or a project journal to start off with. Nice. And this is where they could keep all their ideas about project, any projects they were starting or just ideas for future projects, and to take notes on the projects they were currently doing and things like that. So they all had a project journal. And then setting up your environment in your home, your space, is really important, because this is, projects are very open-ended and they need, well, first they need space. They need space for mess. If you have space, this was a drawback for me because I have a lot of kids, but ideally they each have their own project area. Like if it's a small table, if it's bins to keep things in, just an area, because projects are ongoing.
Yeah.
And you need to allow them the space to have some mess and a project that just sits out as it's getting worked on, and you know, so they can continue their creativity. And like for me, ideally, if I would have loved to have a room where each kid had their own table mm-hmm. to just clutter and leave their things out, and then bins underneath to store things, that would have been perfect. But obviously we don't all have that. But thinking about a space where they don't have to put it all away at the end of the day and move it for something else, because it cuts back on the creativity when they have to restart every time. You know?
That makes sense, because I like to paint with watercolors, but I don't have a mm-hmm. place where I can just keep my stuff out.
Right.
And so that means if I want to do a watercolor, I've got to go get the paper, the pen, the
yes.
paints and everything. And then I have to put it away. So that right. means I don't really do watercolor very often.
As often.
Yeah.
Right. So if you had it just sitting out where you could dabble in it and mm-hmm. then in between things, you would do it more. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And when like an idea strikes you, you could attend to that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's a great example of that. The other thing is to give them supplies. So a lot of projects involve starting with things like making models or a poster or lists and things like that. So you want to have those types of supplies around the house, and you want them to be accessible to them. You know, it's great that everything has its place and all of that. Being organized is very good, because that will help them be able to find things and return things to the places they need to be. But giving them access to the tools they need, and not making it a thing where they have to ask constantly for something for their project that they're doing. So the more access they could have to supplies, in general supplies, like brainstorming, you know, supplies, arts and crafts supplies, plenty of papers and pencils and places to sharpen them, and all of that stuff is just at their fingertips when they need it.
Yeah, I have those plastic drawers.
Mm-hmm.
And what I love about them, yeah, because you can take them out of the frame and
yes.
take it to where you want to use the
yes.
items. Then it's easy to put the supplies back in and return mm-hmm. it, and they're labeled.
That's
so
great.
That helps.
It's great
all
for multiple kids too, because they can each have their own drawer of supplies mm-hmm. and stuff.
Yep. Yeah. I still have some of my bins still have my older kids'
names yeah.
on them when we were homeschooling when they were kids. And I looked at the bins recently. I thought, well, I need to go through these, take the labels off, clean them, and make them more applicable to what we're doing these days.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you need to think about your schedule and make sure everybody is on board together. The family's, you know, unified on how the schedule works. For me, we had a lot of open time because we primarily unschool. So I could let, if they were engaged in a project, I could just open-ended, really just let them go, like, you know, all day long into the night, whatever they needed. But if you have a schedule that you need to follow, then you need to make sure it's clear that when project time is, but mm-hmm. it needs to be a good amount of time, not like a 30 minutes project time. Because if you think about, like you were talking about,
just getting started with that
yeah,
sort of time.
Yeah. Especially in a creativity setting,
mm-hmm.
a good chunk of time as often as you can give them would be good. And if everybody's aware of the schedule, that really helps. I found some weeks when I needed to do that because we had outside classes or things like that, my kids would really look forward to the project times in the schedule, and they really they couldn't wait to get to that, you know, so that was exciting for them too. And that's the basics of setting them up. And then they get started on a project, and that usually starts with a lot of list making, you know, what are your ideas? List. And you help them. You can write things for them if they're not writing yet, if they're really young. You can, my young ones, they drew pictures. Their project journals were pretty much pictures that they drew of ideas they had. And then I would look at them and go, oh, that's awesome. How can we make that happen? And then we'd talk more about it. And for example, my youngest boys, who are, you know, 16 and 17 now.
It's crazy, Jennifer.
I know. They started off, they were probably like 4 or 5, they wanted to play Minecraft and they didn't even really know how to play it yet, but they have older siblings who are doing it. So they wanted to do it. So a lot of their very beginner projects were drawing something in their journal that they were going to go make on Minecraft, you know, and, but all
how
the
cute.
Steps, yeah, all the steps were still there though, because they would start with in their journal what their idea is. And then they did their projects together usually at that age, which by the way, is a choice. You could do group projects or individual projects. Then they would sit down and talk about, well, how are we going to do that on Minecraft? What, you know, what blocks do we need? And then I would help them make a list and we would do all the planning and the research, if you will, before. And then they would finally get on, you know, Minecraft together and do their little project that they planned. So that was the very simplest form of what we did at the beginning for them. So starting off with the lists, and if it's a bigger project, the lists of what am I going to need? What supplies do I need? Who do I need help from? What do I need to go do to research this project? All of those things. And your job as the mentor during that time is to just be asking the questions that help them move on to the next step. Mm-hmm. And a lot of like, instead of giving them answers, that's the point, is don't give them answers, ask them questions, you know, mm-hmm. when they come to you with questions, ask them, say things like, well, let's go find that out together, instead of giving them an answer, you know, and that's part of the thing that's challenging. Like, for example, if your child wants to build something like out of wood, right? And you know, well, I know these tools they need. And then they give you a list and it's missing 5 of the tools you know they mm-hmm. need, right? You aren't going to look at them and say, well, you also need this, this, and this. But you might look at it and go, oh, this is a great list. What else do you think you need? And you just mm-hmm. keep going at it from that direction. And then after they have done all that, you know, you follow the steps that come after that. So then you might be taking them to research. They might be going out and talking to people in the community. They might be needing to go on a trip to the hardware store. They might need to go watch the movies or all the research, but it can look like anything, any form it needs to take. And then the trial and error, just like if you were doing a project, the same thing. You do all those steps, but they're really leading you as it happens and you're supporting them and it just keeps going. And I mean, that's the basics of it. And there's other things you're doing along the way. And one of the big things is you're not telling them they're wrong. You're not really telling them no for the most part. Obviously, if they're doing something dangerous, you want to tell them no. But instead of that, you're letting them figure out what doesn't work or what was a wrong idea in their project so that they are creating the solutions. It's a lot of trial and error. That requires patience on their part and your part. But the rewards of that are so, so, so good. And they get so excited when they figure something out and then it works, you know?
Mm-hmm. My middle son, some of my kids didn't graduate from high school at 18. That's pretty normal for a lot of homeschool kids. They have so much going on.
Right.
A lot of times, like your kids graduate really early. My kids were like, I got a lot of stuff going on.
Right.
I'm going to get to it when I get to it. So when he was 18, he started taking some enrichment classes and was introduced to Kung Fu. And he fell in love with it. Well, I didn't have a lot of funding for Kung Fu lessons. And he talked to the guy who was teaching Kung Fu and he started interning with the kung mm-hmm. fu,
yes.
with the Sifu to pay for his lessons. He went on to get a black belt.
That's
wonderful.
And
so my part of the project was he didn't drive. So I agreed to get him back and forth to his lessons.
Yeah.
And we made it work. But I was like, well, you need to talk to the guy, you know, the Sifu, and you need to find out what he needs from you and, mm-hmm. you know, how much time you have to put in to get to cover your lessons and things like that. And he eventually started teaching. He taught kids at the Kung Fu studio.
Yeah.
But that was his major project. And he's on the spectrum. So everything he did, he did his timeline at a different time than some of the other family members, but mm-hmm. it was at the perfect time for him to do that. And so, I would be like, well, what do you need to do for that? Well, how are you going to get your uniform?
I told you did project-based stuff.
I do. did, but I didn't. Yeah. I didn't count it as school.
Yeah.
No, I counted it. Like I said, to me it was more like, so when my oldest daughter was in, she went to public school for a while, and she wanted to get on the dance team. She'd never taken a dance lesson in her life, but she had really good rhythm. And I said, hey, you know, if you want to try out for it, awesome. What does that entail? And she's like, I have to go to these practices, and then there's a tryout. And then if I get on the team, I have to come up with $1,000 to pay for the uniforms, and I have to go to a camp. And I'm like, okay, I don't know how we're going to cover any of that, but go for it. And
how then are you going to make it happen?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And then, I did tell her, I was like, well, here's the thing with the money part. You can fundraise and I'll help you do it. And so she wrote to her grandparents and she told them what she was doing, and they gave her some money, and she did some little babysitting or whatever. And we gave her some money and we managed to come up with the money. But I, like you, I didn't say no. I was like, okay, let's figure it out. Let's see how that's going to work out. You know, like, go for it. So, but again, it was something she did at her public school. It was extracurricular. So my kids' project, I never really gave them any credit in school for them, but I fully supported them and I love them. But it's not our curriculum.
For me, it was school. It was everything about it was school. And I can just tell you, as like my kids got older, there were projects. I mean, I stopped mentoring and directing because they knew how to do this themselves. At some point, if you do this a lot, your kids just know what to do. And you guys are familiar with it. But like my daughter started teaching yoga when she was 10 at a library. And that was all from, it came from doing some project-based stuff where she wanted to learn about yoga. And that's what it led to. And then when she was 16, she opened her own yoga studio. And that was all started just with a little project idea. And it grew and grew. And she did it. We supported her, you know, by asking what she needed help with and things. But she created a whole business, you know, and
a free she had to get a lease and a building space and everything.
She had a lease. She had a business license. She had employees. And she was doing all of that because she had learned these skills early on if I want to accomplish this, I have to do these steps, you know, and she learned that through doing these projects early on. And then another really good example, and this is why I count them as school, because for her, that was like so much school, so much academic in that process, you know. But she's not an academic. She would never say she likes academics. She does not like them, but she was doing it all. She was doing all of it, and just not, she wasn't seeing it that like it was school, you know. But it was great. But my other daughter decided to remodel my van so she could travel the country, and she knows nothing about cars.
That was amazing to see.
And she spent 2 years working full time at a coffee shop so that she could earn the money, because she knew she needed the money first before she could have the parts to do the van and all of that. And it was a project. It was a huge, long project. And this was past the age where I was directing that. She had a notebook. It was all her project ideas. This was in there. And she, you know, had lists and lists of things she needed to do to accomplish this. And then she spent 2 years, you know, earning the money and then from scratch redoing the van with absolutely no knowledge ahead of time on anything about cars or electrical systems or solar panels or any of that. And she watched YouTube videos and read manuals and talked to people who knew about these things and had other adults come show her some things to work on. And it was a big project, but it was all done the same way as all of our other project-based learning happened.
That, you know, fixing up a van and living in it and traveling, that's like super trendy now. She was way ahead of the curve.
Yeah. My son did that for a while too. But that whole building out process is like, it takes some time and it is kind of a mess. And
it
then,
is.
You know, where are you going to put all the stuff you pulled out to, you know?
Yeah.
But it was in charge of it.
Yeah. Well, and actually, as we're talking, and Jennifer, you're going to laugh at me, I'm like, actually, I did count one of my kids. So my youngest daughter, she got very interested in film and photography and sound editing. So again, she was exposed to this at the Enrichment Academy that you and I ran together. And then she decided that she wanted to do dual enrollment and earn college credit and high school credit at the same time. And the campus where she went, she was able to get an internship with the guy who taught the film and photography classes at the Enrichment Academy. Mm-hmm. And I did give her school credit for that, for photography and film. And the internship was on her transcript. And she does podcasting things now. Yep. So, you know, it led down the road to some employment. And so, yeah I did actually, it was her own thing.
See?
And I was just like, well, here's how that has to work, you know.
Yeah.
And we have to figure this out. And she had to talk to people and get an internship. Eventually she got paid for it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I did actually give credit for it.
Yeah, and I think in high school, I see skills. There's so many skills that come from this. And, you know, my daughter, one of my other daughters that's in pre-med in college right now, these skills that she learned from project-based learning and having to figure out things on her own have been so useful in a college setting. She's able to, you know, figure out and solve her problems she's having. She's able to go talk to professors. She knows how to go look for help if she needs it. She's very good at goal setting and then, you know, figuring out what she needs to meet those goals. And it all stems from doing these, even when they're little, giving them that freedom to follow something and see it through and make some mistakes and figure out the solutions. And we've talked about some, you know, successes, some great successes from this, but there were a million projects that just ended or
fizzled out,
didn't go the way the kids wanted them to do or disappointed the kids. And all of that was great learning as well.
Oh, for sure. I think that our culture doesn't really value mistakes and failures, but really those are the building blocks for your future successes.
Mm-hmm. I agree completely. Mm-hmm. I would say another thing with a large family that was really beneficial to us with the project-based schooling was that sometimes the kids' interest bled over into the whole family. You know, sometimes one child would be interested in something that nobody else was really that interested in, and then it would become a whole part of our family. And one of the examples of that is one of my sons was, I don't even know why, I don't know where this came from, but he wanted a cactus garden. And he was like six. It was a very long time ago. And so it was in his project book that he was going to make a cactus garden. And he happened to know somebody who was like a farmer. And he asked him for advice and he made a little cactus garden in our yard. And from that stemmed a whole interest in gardening for the whole family. And then from that stemmed us having a huge community garden for our homeschool community for 10 years. And it all developed out of one of my kids' interests growing through our family. So it's a cool way to get everyone involved as well. Mm-hmm. Here at the end of our podcast, we like to answer a big question. Holly, what's our big question for today?
Today's big question is from Anonymous, who asks, how do you know what to teach and when? My son said he's worried he's not learning the same stuff as his public school friends. What do we think about this one, ladies?
We're just laughing.
So I've never been concerned about it. I've never worried like if they're learning the same thing at the same time as everybody else. That's one of the things I love about homeschooling is that they're learning at their own pace and when they're ready for it. So it really hasn't concerned me. When my kids do get ready to start talking about graduating, we look at that. I do go look at that point at what our state requirements are for high school graduation. And I don't necessarily require all those things of my kids, but we look at it together and see if we feel like, you know, to be a well-rounded person, if they've, you know, covered most of the things that other people have covered before they go off into the world.
Right.
But I do know that this is a concern for a lot of people. A lot of people are worried about this. So what about you guys? Have you tried to keep your kids on track with what they're doing at public school?
Well, we haven't, because going to public school has never been a consideration for us. In fact, after my oldest daughter went to public school in high school, we took that option off the table and we said that was not an option for our family. So because we are pursuing our education using different methodologies in the public school, we don't compare ourselves to the public school. And I see this come up a lot in the various homeschool groups that I belong mm-hmm. to on Facebook, where people are saying, so we're here in Texas. We want to be able to keep up with the Texas requirements. And my question to them is, are you putting your kid back into public school at any time?
That would be the only reason to me.
Yeah, because if so, sure, you might want to do that. But I think this question comes up because of quizzing, because public school kids say to each other and to their friends, oh, are you doing this in school? And then, you know, your child who has public school friends who's not studying the same curriculum, they might feel like, oh, I might be behind. So I think it's our job really to explain to our kids why they might not be learning the same things at the same time as their public school or even private school friends, so that they can tell their friends why they don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. You know, I think giving them the words. And I think that you as a parent being confident about it as well is helpful, because if you're worrying about, oh my gosh, are they up to par with everybody around them? Your kids feel that as well.
Right. And sometimes it's your spouse that's saying that.
Yeah. Or other family members. Yeah.
Or someone else. But you know, if you've ever moved, we didn't, but if you've ever moved as a child from one school system to another, you quickly find out they're not studying the same thing.
Right.
Oh,
right.
I was in four schools in 1 year.
Wow.
Well, so when I was in seventh grade, we went to move halfway through seventh grade. So I was in one school for first half of seventh grade, another school for the second half. And then in the fall, eighth grade started, and I was in that school for the first semester, and then we moved again. So I was in another school for the second semester. Anyway, it was very enlightening. And you're right. There's no standardization among schools, even in the same state. And so, I think it's really important to say in front of your kid to other people, if they're questioning it, oh, yeah, you know, we're not concerned with following a public school schedule. We're learning things on a different timeline because we use this type of learning model or whatever. And, you know, saying it in front of your kid to other people and saying it to your kid and helping them have the words, I think you'll get rid of that worry and you can move on past that.
Yeah.
Right. But for some of those moms, though, like if they really don't know what to teach and when, then you can introduce them to the idea of a scope and sequence if they really want to follow the others.
Yes.
But that you, as part of the conversation, you also want to find out why, so you can help them. You know, why does that bother you? What is your real concern? Are you afraid you're missing out on something that the other kids are doing? Or do you just not know? And so, like, none of my kids were ever concerned with that because they got to do so many other things.
Yes, I was going to say that too. My kids have never been concerned about that. And they're very aware of it.
Yeah, sometimes my kids wanted, like my oldest daughter went to public school. My middle daughter wanted to go, but by that point, the option was taken off the table. So I said, like, what is it that you want? Well, I want to take classes with other kids my age, and I want this. Okay, we're going to do a co-op.
Yeah.
You know, so if you're taking something away or you're not going to be doing something, you have to replace it with a comparable activity or choice so that your child, you know, like Jennifer, you would talk to your kids, what are you interested in learning? Like, you also should ask your kids, like, what is it about public school that you think is interesting, especially if they came from public school? Then you really have make sure you're replacing what you've taken from them with something that's as good or better.
Before we go, we want to leave you with a few reminders.
The next SAT is May 4th. The registration deadline is April 19th, and the late registration is April 23rd. So you still have plenty of time to study.
We wouldn't have a podcast without our listeners' support, and you can give us even more support by leaving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and sharing new episodes on social media.
Remember that you can get 20% off the cost of your Transcript Maker subscription with our exclusive coupon code HAPPY. That's HAPPY. In all caps.
If you want to send us a big question of your own, you can email us at happyhomeschoolpod@gmail.com, and you can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Happy Homeschool Pod.
If you want to learn more about anything we discussed today, check the show notes in the episode description or go to our website at www.happyhomeschoolerpodcast.com.
Next episode, we'll be discussing all the ins and outs of homeschooling in California. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Jennifer.
I'm Holly.
And I'm Melody.
Happy homeschooling.
Thank you for listening to the Happy Homeschooler Podcast, a Transcript Maker production. I'm your host, Jennifer Jones. My co-hosts are Holly Williams-Urbach and Melody Gillum. This podcast is produced by Matthew Bass and edited by Nora Williams. Our logo is by Nora Williams, and our music is by The Great Pangolin. You can find more of her work on YouTube and Twitter at Kylie Wins. That's K-A-I-L-E-Y Wins. Also, Holly, you cracked me up because every time we talk about anything slightly, like, you're like, no, I don't do that. And then
I do all of that. I just don't think of it that way. I'm like, I'm an Ambleside Online girl. That's what I am. I'm a Charlotte Mason girl.